For the Climate Discussion Nexus, I'm John Robson, with another readout video from our free Wednesday Wake Up email newsletter, and another attempt to read a list properly. Last week, Argentina was actually number 42. 42? Yes, we're struggling with the countdown math, so please don't ask what you get if you multiply 6 times 9. But it was 42, and this week, Colombia is number 41 on our list of all-time views by jurisdiction. And by the way, Colombia has two O's, which is of interest only to Canadians and geography trivia geeks, because our British Columbia has an O and a U. But I digress, because we should be thinking about China and how many I's it has. Especially given this week's very strange lead story from Britain's Daily Telegraph and then Daily Mail that, quote, Chinese kill switches found in U.S. solar farms, end quote. Or, in the Mail's version, quote, China has installed kill switches in solar panels sold to the West, end quote. And if you're wondering what's odd about Western governments falling for crass communist subversion, it's neither the subversion nor the spinelessness. It's how easily we humans get used to things that really ought to startle and outrage us. As Michael Schellenberger wrote, quote, it sounds like the far-fetched plot of a cheesy James Bond movie. The Chinese military causes civilization-crippling blackouts around the world, plunging cities from San Francisco to Berlin to Seoul into chaos while invading Taiwan. Hospitals stall, subways freeze, data centers go dark, end quote. Unfortunately, as he immediately added, quote, but it's not far-fetched. In fact, China just demonstrated that it has the power and may be willing to use it, end quote. Now, this is not a conspiracy, okay? It's an openly announced Chinese Communist Party plan to attain world domination by 2049, the 100th anniversary of the military takeover that they call the revolution. Nor is it any secret that Western governments will not see, hear, or speak evil of our enemies if they can possibly avoid it. Including that, as Schellenberger adds, quote, under China's national intelligence law, Chinese companies are legally obligated to cooperate with state intelligence services upon request, end quote. Again, it's no secret, and its implications are not hard to work out. But, to again borrow a line from The Goon Show, if you accuse our leaders of acting like fools on national security, they may plausibly reply, we're not acting. So, the prospect of a confrontation with China leading to them suddenly switching off the power, the water, or both in the West, and our politicians going, oops, and surrendering, is not fanciful. But neither is the prospect of our cyber warfare capabilities turning out to dwarf theirs. So, as the Imperial Japanese triumph at Pearl Harbor after a decade of planning was overturned just 7 months later by a ragtag group of improvisers at Midway, we might promptly crush them. But do you really want to gamble our future liberty on that possibility? Because our leaders seem to be doing so in all kinds of ways, including allowing Chinese infiltration of the key infrastructure for the supposed green energy transition. In the newsletter, we also complain about the New York Times' obsession with the supposed link between the alleged surge in bad weather and rising insurance costs, which obscures their vision of much more obvious things. And so, in Climate Forward, David Galles warned that, quote, just months after fires devastated parts of Los Angeles, one of the leading home insurers in California, State Farm, is temporarily raising rates 17%. It is also just the latest example of the indirect but increasingly costly ways that climate change is affecting the American economy, end quote. But not even the Times can blame climate change for the astounding news that in the wake of the wildfires that devastated Los Angeles, county and city, in January, in Pacific Palisades and Altadena, as of the morning of May 12th, quote, the county has issued 7 building permits, end quote. 7. An estimated 12,000 properties were destroyed or damaged, and it's giving permission for people to repair their own stuff at the rate of barely 2 a month. Competence? We don't have no stinking competence. Not in fighting fires, not in preventing them, as our video on the LA fire said, or in rebuilding afterward. Even though it's very important for progressives to manage this kind of thing. And speaking of progressive incompetence in the once golden state, as Jessica Carl jeered on Bloomberg, Californians actually might be looking at $8 a gallon gas and blaming the authorities. In her colorful phrase, quote, no way am I filling a 14-gallon tank with a week's worth of Erewhon smoothie money, end quote. Which, in case you too don't get it enough, is not Esalen babble. Erewhon is no longer Samuel Butler's inverted utopia, but an inverted reality where, quote, we believe that nutrition is the key to a radiant lifestyle, end quote, and to charging $14 for an organic peanut butter protein smoothie, or $4.99 for 2 full ounces of the Magic Mind productivity shot. But we digress. As Carl said, quote, despite calling the fossil fuel industry the polluted heart of this climate crisis a mere year ago, Newsom is ordering officials to work with oil refiners to ensure that Californians continue to have access to a safe, affordable, and reliable supply of transportation fuels, end quote. Continue? Hoo-ha! Like many a green energy transition zealot, Newsom is discovering that his policies are creating a disaster, so he wants to keep the policies but lose the disaster, and he has no idea how, or even any idea that he has no idea. Bummer, man. Also, Parker Gallant's tireless spelunking into the Ontario power system and the complacent failure of the allegedly conservative administration of Doug Ford to clean up a mess that they once campaigned against reveals that the weird system we use here in this province for subsidizing the supposedly cheaper new power sources via the allegedly obsolete and expensive older ones cost Ontario ratepayers $138 million Canadian dollars in April alone because we dump unneeded costly modern power at a loss to neighboring American states. And speaking of wasting money, the Canadian Federal Liberal Administration and that same Ontario Progressive Conservative one have been recklessly subsidizing EVs, including promising Honda $5 billion between them for a factory in Alliston, Ontario, to focus on the EV supply chain, which is now on hold for at least 2 years due to the lack of an EV demand chain. Also, the London, Ontario-based Aspire Food Group, which aspired to make us and our little dogs too eat crickets at our expense, got some $8.5 million from the federal AgriNovate program and then folded anyway. But if you're looking for an apology from those politicians, you finally get those crickets. And now for some fear about lack of fear. In the New York Times Climate Forward, David Wallace Wells asks, quote, can we really fight climate change when we're not scared of it, end quote? To which one might well retort, probably not, but why would you want to? Which takes us down the postmodern rabbit hole, because the author goes on to cite an energy consultant on, quote, the possibility that the cultural and political momentum behind climate action is several years past its peak. It's a 2021 thing, he wrote, end quote. But how can it be losing its coolness and appeal if the evidence has only gotten stronger than strength itself, having already, we were told, been overwhelming in 2021, and indeed in 2007, with a hideous onslaught of ever more unprecedented bad weather in the last 4 years? Do the zealots not believe in evidence? Or do they no longer trust in their fellow citizens to think? Because it's actually remarkable and instructive how often it happens when you scratch a public policy proposal or analysis that contempt for ordinary people leaks out. For instance, another climate-forward piece with the sneering Making Dishwashers Great Again headline says that the Trump administration's repeal or weakening of water and energy efficiency regulations will cost consumers money. But if one of those modern toilets, showerheads, washing machines, or whatever President Trump hates actually work well while reducing utility bills, you don't need regulations to make people buy them or subsidies. And if they don't work, then forcing people to pretend they do is arrogant and wasteful. In the newsletter, we also quote Matthew Wilicki that, quote, you've probably seen it by now. National Geographic and every major outlet are screaming some version of 2024 was the hottest year ever and the coldest year of the rest of your life, end quote. Which could prompt a sardonic comment on the odd way that legacy media outlets, instead of competing with one another, now all appear to be tentacles of the same beast. But instead, he says, quote, these headlines are not scientific conclusions, they are marketing slogans designed to reinforce a narrative that today's warming is not just unusual, but unprecedented and therefore catastrophic. Which, he adds, quote, collapses the moment you ask a simple question. Compared to what? End quote. And his answer is the historical record, and we agree with him. But we'd also point out that it collapses if you compare it to what you actually experienced last year, or what you're experiencing now. In the newsletter, we also continue our Look It Up series with an item on global electricity generation. We had previously referred to the Energy Institute's annual statistical review of world energy, but frankly, it's a bit of a doorstopper. So, to cut to the chase on where the world's electricity comes from, we recommend Our World and Data's Global Electricity Mix page. And we recommend one particular chart that provides a very helpful summary of the amazing energy transition that's underway in which renewables are... As you see, for the first part of the energy transition, from 1985 to 2010, the fossil fuel share plummeted, rose from 64% to 67%, while renewables and nuclear both gave up a bit. After 2010, the renewables share rose from 20 to 30%. But not all of it came from fossil fuels, though they did drop in that period, from 67 to 61%. But nuclear also dropped from 13 to 9%. So, for the whole interval, from 1985 to the present, the fossil fuel share dropped from 64 to 61%, renewables rose from 21 to 30, and nuclear fell from 15 to 9. But replacing twice as much nuclear as fossil fuel is counterproductive, if the point is to reduce carbon dioxide emissions, though it is very much in keeping with progressives' weirdly irrational fear of atomic energy. But in any case, there's no way that those lines add up to a transition in which renewables take over from fossil fuels by 2035 or 2050, no matter how much our governments try to force it on us or how much pain in the form of price hikes and blackouts they expect us to endure in the process of not getting there. Oh, and Dr. Roy Spencer just announced the publication of his new peer-reviewed paper on urban heat island effects on U.S. summertime temperature data. The headline number is that, as Spencer says, quote, 65% of the U.S. linear warming trend between 1895 and 2023 was due to increasing population density at the suburban and urban stations, end quote. But it's a nuanced piece of work, including that at the rural stations, the contribution of population density was only 8%, and that most of the UHI effect that Spencer uncovered was before 1970, and that the paper only looks at summertime data using what is called the raw temperature record. One of the reviewers of the paper insisted that the cooked temperature record, though they preferred to call it homogenized data, has been adjusted to remove all the effects of urbanization, so there was no reason for Spencer even to look at it. And they wouldn't let him, even though, as Spencer notes, other researchers have gone into the way they fixed the data and have said that rather than cleaning up the dirty stuff, they actually ended up dirtying the clean stuff, as they would. Finally, from the co2science.org archive, purple foxglove is an attractive garden flower with the regrettable drawback of being very toxic, including to humans, though it's also the source of digitalis, which can be synthesized into a useful heart medicine. And we note again that the CO2 Science Archive contains suspiciously few experiments on toxic plants, which we hope isn't due to accidents in the lab involving them. But in this case, there were two, and only two, in 1991 and 2007, and they found that an extra 300 parts per million of CO2 boosted its growth by 17.5%. So do look and admire, but don't touch without gloves. For the Climate Discussion Nexus, I'm John Robson. And, to borrow a phrase from Ford Prefect, I trust the Communist Party of China as far as I could comfortably spit a rat.